This is Morning Edition on Vermont Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. COP26, the 26th annual United Nations Climate Change Conference, wraps up today in Glasgow, Scotland. The event provides an international stage for global leaders to explain how they intend to fight climate change and implement an urgent plan for transitioning to renewable energy, including ways we can adapt to fast-changing climate conditions all over the world. Now, previous conferences have yielded little in the way of real action, and environmental activists say not nearly enough is being done to avert a climate catastrophe. Amy Kolb-Noyes is a journalist and writer who attended COP26 through an invitation from a Northern Vermont University adjunct professor working with the Beijing-based international nonprofit ICET, the Innovation Center for Energy and Transportation. And Amy Noyes joins me now to share some of her takeaways from Glasgow and what she hopes to share with these NVU students with an eye towards future COP events. Amy, thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure, Mitch.
So give us this sort of a broad takeaway from COP26 in Glasgow over the last 2 weeks. What is actually coming out of this international climate summit?
Sure. There's been a couple of big announcements. The two biggest carbon-emitting countries, China and the U.S., have agreed to take some action to phase out coal, to cut methane emissions, and protect forests. But I should note, critics doubt that agreement will go far enough. And some countries and companies and localized governments, like cities and states, have committed to phasing out fossil fuel vehicles by 2040. China and the U.S. did not make that pledge, but some states and U.S. car makers did sign on to that.
Any other big issues that really did not come to fruition out of this meeting?
Yeah, definitely. The pledges made by policymakers at COP26 do not add up to the global emission reductions that scientists say we need to avoid major climate change. They won't hold global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius, which was the standard set by the Paris Climate Agreement back in 2015.
So the world's political leaders say they're going to do things to address climate change, but you say there were many activists and delegates from indigenous groups, in particular, I suppose, in what collectively has been called the Global South, who are really skeptical about this. What did you see in that regard at COP?
Yeah, I was really impressed by the number of young people, especially young women, who were there representing their communities. They were very vocal, many saying their politicians can't be trusted and that they're the people protecting the earth and the carbon sinks like the Amazon rainforest. Here's one activist from northern Pakistan. Her name's Aisha Sadiqa, and she had strong words for Western countries who she says have a history of exploiting what she calls the global south for natural resources like oil and the very resources that are the primary causes of driving climate change.
I became involved in the climate movement not because I wanted to protect the environment, although that is a very important and necessary reason. I became involved because the global north has slaughtered, bombed, and starved my people to death in the name of oil.
There she was speaking at a youth rally last Friday, and we heard from speakers from many indigenous communities at that rally, and they're really getting it from both ends. They're experiencing violent weather events from climate change, and there's also big industries like oil companies prospecting the land they're trying to protect. And there's this immense frustration among activists who say the climate crisis that could displace or eradicate their way of life is being ignored by wealthy Western leaders. Here's one young woman from Jamaica. Unfortunately, I didn't get her name, but she was speaking at that same rally.
Last week, my heart was broken by the people inside that COP building, by the world leaders who steal our sacred words and use them to defend and uphold the oppressive systems of capitalism and white supremacy, who tell us the action needed to prevent sea level rise engulfing my ancestral home in Jamaica is impossible or not practical.
So you can hear the emotion in her voice there. And indigenous communities in the global south say they're protecting the vast majority of the earth's natural resources, and they have a very low carbon footprint for their communities, but they're already suffering the consequences of global warming.
Some really emotional sound there, Amy. One thing that seems inescapable about this climate conversation is that it's as much a financial issue as it is an environmental one. And you sat in on some high-level talks, I understand, related to finance and climate change at COP26. What did you hear there?
Yeah, I learned that $130 trillion will be needed to achieve worldwide net zero emissions. That's a really big number. Here's U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen calling for global leaders to embrace the expensive investments needed to combat climate change. Investments, she says, will have major economic upshots.
Tackling the climate crisis is imperative. And at the same time, it's the greatest economic opportunity of our time. We can and will create good-paying jobs and new industries as we tackle climate change. This holds true not just for the United States, but for all countries.
And another figure that stood out to me is there are still 800 million people in the world living without energy. So it behooves us to make sure new energy systems that are coming online rely on green energy rather than coal-fired plants or something like that. And if we want that to happen, we're going to have to figure out how to pay for it.
And really, all this connects back to one of the reasons that you were able to attend COP26 in the first place, because you were invited by a Northern Vermont University adjunct professor who's been working with an international nonprofit. That professor, I understand, is hoping to get some accreditation, which could see NVU students potentially attend future COP events. What else can you tell us about that?
This is so exciting to me. Lucia Green-Weiskill is proposing NVU at a global climate change course where students can learn about climate policy, technology, science, finance, all of it. And they'll work with Vermont lawmakers on local policy objectives. And then they'll travel to future UN climate change conferences as a student delegation.
That's Amy Kolb-Noyes, a journalist and writer who attended COP26 through an invitation from NVU. And of course, a former colleague of ours here at Vermont Public Radio. Amy, we miss you, and it's been great speaking with you.
You too, Mitch. Thanks so much.